This is ESPN Radio.
Rush. Bing. White Mike. Bing. Starting quarterback jobs. Collision course. Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got a lot to get to this hour here. Dan Orlovsky is going to stop by, talk some NFL rankings, and I saw him on NFL Live give out his college football playoff top four as we got those rankings coming out tonight, the first round for the new CFP group there. Yeah, Chris, a little extra spice. Been watching NFL Live today. They've got Dan Orlovsky giving college rankings out here. They had Daniel Cormier and Ryan Clark playing Papa Shot outside. They're unhinged on trade deadline day.
Oh, yeah, they got the RCDC podcast, too, so I guess that's where that's coming into play. But Dan Orlovsky, given his college football rankings, that's awesome. But what I need Dan Orlovsky to do when he comes on the show with us is explain what's going on with his boy Carson Wentz, because that turnover at the end of the fourth quarter and then the one he threw in overtime, help me make it make sense. That's what I want. Help me make it make sense in my own mind.
Yeah.
Because the Carson Wentz that Dan Orlovsky's trying to sell me versus the Carson Wentz I'm seeing when I'm turning on the television, it seems like two completely different players.
Yeah, that was one of the more yikey plays of all time that was awarded several yikes over the course of that. I don't know if yikey is a word that I can say, but it might be going forward. No one can stop me.
Bing bong!
No one
on fire today.
Can stop me. Shout out to Jerry right there. That was, in fact, the combination bing bong and Mike Breen bang for those keeping score at home.
Bing bong!
Electric, Jerry.
I know I'm a little biased, but that's a good drop. That's a good drop.
That's some of your finest work ever right there. So a cause for celebration around here anytime it can come up. We certainly won't be talking about that with the Kansas City Chiefs coming up here soon.
Bing bong!
Bang! Here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. All right, let's get into those Kansas City Chiefs, though, by the way, Chris, because looking at this situation and what we saw last night, a Monday Night Football win, and we know we're going to have these arguments with college football, putting value on teams that actually go and win the games. The Kansas City Chiefs managed to win this game against New York. But, Chris, that was about as uninspired a performance as I've seen from this Kansas City Chiefs team since the Patrick Mahomes era began in this group. The wide receivers look lost. Travis Kelce looks broken in ways I could have never predicted. And this offensive line is continuing to highlight how much we probably didn't give credit to the tackles they had last year in Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. So I know you were waiting for the answer, Chris, but it's official. I am off the Kansas City Chiefs' benefit of the doubt train. I can't do it anymore. I won't do it to myself anymore. I care too much about my own feelings.
No, I'm with you on that one, and I think I'm hopping off that bandwagon as well, especially with their upcoming schedule. They got Green Bay at Las Vegas Raiders and then home against the Dallas Cowboys. We could be talking about the Kansas City Chiefs' season being over with before we get to Thanksgiving, which would probably make Andy Reid's turkey taste terrible. But, I mean, that's where this team is at, because if they play the way that they played last night against the New York Giants, against any one of those three teams, there's no chance that they're going to be able to get a win. And, Mike, we keep talking about it over and over and over again. It's starting to sound like a broken record. They got to stop giving the ball away to the other team. I mean, last night, we didn't have to wait long. They marched down the field, a methodical 12-play drive, and then on the last play, on third down, Pat Mahomes, for some reason, wants to try to throw a jump pass to Josh Gordon. It bounces up in the air and ends up being an interception in the end zone. Like, at some point, you got to realize we got to preserve the opportunity to get points out of this drive. You don't expect a veteran quarterback like Pat Mahomes to make those types of mistakes. Now, I get it. His receivers aren't helping him out, and his defense is putting a lot more pressure on him this season. But his defense wasn't putting a ton of pressure on him last night, because his defense held the New York Giants down pretty well. They only had 300 total yards of offense. My problem is the lack of productivity with this Kansas City Chiefs offense, and on an average yards per play basis, you were outgained by the New York Giants, which is one of the worst offenses in the NFL. So let that sink in. That's where the Kansas City Chiefs offense is. We can't assign the level of success that we've seen from them in years past to this particular outfit. They're just not them. It's the same guys in the same jerseys, but they're not making the same plays. And so at some point, we got to accept this team for what they are. Mom told me a long time ago, when somebody shows you who they are, you better believe them. Through eight games, the Kansas City Chiefs have shown us who they are. It's just about time that the football world catch up and just accept them for what they are. A team that turns the ball over way too much in order to be productive.
Yeah, Chris, this is the thing that stuns me, too, because when we usually talk about confidence in football teams, because that's what this seems like to me. It seems like a confidence issue that's born out of a lack of execution. For a team that has been there, and you mentioned, same guys in the same jerseys, they've accomplished at an incredibly high level, so they should have the ability to understand, we know how it can get better. Like, I've been on bad football teams, Chris, and usually what was at the core of that was a group of guys who had not seen that execution carry over into the field in a material way. Like, it's the basketball phrase, you got to see the ball go through the basket a few times.
Yep.
These guys have done that over and over again, and so I'm stunned hearing Andy Reid, this is him after the game, their head coach, talking about the team's confidence coming off of this win.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, everything's not beautiful right now, but we're fighting through that. That happens in this game. There's great competition in this league, which I think you know. You saw those games yesterday, and I mean, teams that were supposed to win by X number of points get beaten. And that's, there's so much parity in this league, so you got to fight. That's the part I'm taking out of this game. Our guys battled. They didn't give up on each other. They kept working through what could have been a time when you just throw your hands up and go, oh, my God. I mean, things aren't working the way they're supposed to work. You know, guys didn't do that. So we'll build on that. I mean, let's keep going. I mean, they don't give these things away, and I think that's important for everybody to understand that, I mean, that other team is, you know, they're coming after you, and you're going to get their best shot, and I thought they did a heck of a job with it.
But, Chris, even that, the idea of the Chiefs getting everyone's best shot, that's been the case for 3 years now. That's not new.
No, it's not new. In the fact that you've got a battle against a 2-win team in week 8, I mean, it does make you scratch your head when you think about a team that's coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, right? Like, I understand that there are some new parts along the offensive line and trying to get that to gel, but the issue for me is just the passing game and Pat Mahomes and his receivers not seeming to be on the same page, not seeing the defense the same way, not recognizing the coverages, and making sure that you're working the right route combinations in order to have more productivity in the passing game. Like, that's just not something that we expected to see from Pat Mahomes or Andy Reid-led offense, but that's where we're at right now. And when you think about the turnovers, they've had 12 in the last 4 games. They lead the league in turnovers, and Pat Mahomes leads the league in interceptions. Like, it's hard to fathom how they got to this place. But based on what we're seeing, I just don't know that they can find their way out of it, because if they could, why hadn't it happened yet?
Yeah, the onus would have been on that to change last night. You had the perfect soft landing spot in a New York Giants team that feels like it's waiting for the dizzying knockout punch over the course of this season. And instead, you had an effort that looked uninspired across the board. And I heard Ryan Clark say it last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. It's boring now. The Kansas City Chiefs team that used to be the most exciting team in football, now we get those plays, Chris, down on the goal line where Travis Kelce comes over at quarterback. And I have been the biggest fan of the Chiefs' low red zone acting shenanigans for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember in college, Chris, when you're getting ready for bowl season and you're the only ones left on campus, and they have you go as a team bonding activity, and you go bowling, or you go and see a movie, or you go do some sort of forced fun that's just there to keep you out of trouble from going and using all that free time the wrong way.
Yeah.
It feels like forced fun now for the Chiefs. Like, they're trying to will something that is just not there for this group right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing I don't understand. You're spending actual practice time working on these trick plays or the French pastry, so to speak, with your offense, rather than focusing on the fundamentals and fixing something that is broken. Like, that's the part that doesn't make sense to me. Like, what part of the game is that when you're doing this flea flicker on the goal line that doesn't work, by the way, and yet you can't figure out how your offense can be more functional and, you know, kind of get back to some semblance of what we've seen the first 3 years of Pat Mahomes as a starter? Like, that's the part that makes it hard for me to understand why Andy Reid would even entertain playing that brand of football. But one thing is clear. This is a team that's not disciplined. This is an offense that's not on the same page. They give the ball away. I mean, you have 12 penalties for 103 yards. Like, that's not good. That's not championship caliber. And then all of the turnovers, man. This Kansas City Chiefs team is not a good team, and it's about time that we accept that and that they're probably not going to be the team that wins the AFC West, which is not something that either you or I could have imagined when this season started.
What a world. By the way, speaking of the AFC West, Jason Fitz our ESPN radio host of Spain and Fitz, and resident Raiders fan who's been begging for us to make them number one in the AFC West to consider them as a legitimate contender, going to join us in the 6 o'clock hour. Coming up next, though, Chris Canty took you through the best of what we saw in Week 8 of the NFL. Now we got to go swim in the gutter. That's coming up. It's the bottom five next on ESPN Radio.
Bing bong!
Bang!
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, reminding you to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. We got Dan Orlovsky coming up in 10 minutes around here. We'll take you through some college and pro stuff. Chris Canty has some serious questions for him on Carson Wentz that need to be resolved. We've also
Everybody, though? I feel like everybody should be questioning whether or not Carson Wentz is the goods, right?
I feel like we've been asking that question for a really long time, too, Chris. Like, it's a testament to just the talent we thought was there that we've hung on this long.
Yeah, I mean, he's just good enough to get you fired, right? He's the guy that has this immense amount of talent, but he can never fully unlock his potential. And you keep chasing after the Carson Wentz of 2017. And the further removed that we get from that Carson Wentz, the more and more I think it's likely that we're never going to see that guy again.
I think we even saw flashes, I mean, at the end of 2019. There's been some good stuff this year. It's just been too few and far between, and then you get disasters like we saw against Tennessee. So we'll get to plenty of that. We'll also talk about future landing spots potentially for DeSean Jackson. Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, reported that the Rams have now officially waived DeSean Jackson. He had been trying to find a trade partner in recent days. That deadline came and went, and there was nothing there. We can get to all of that coming up. But Chris Canty took you through the top five things from the NFL weekend that was. It's Tuesday around here. Let's get you to the gutter now.
Which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
Let's kickstart the party.
Number 5.
I didn't want to do this. I held on as long as I could. Number 5, the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm sick of it, Chris. I'm sick of them embarrassing me in front of company like they did last night. This Chiefs team that got a win against the New York Giants in a game that felt lost and hapless certainly doesn't feel like it. And so until further notice, they've got to pay for what they've done. Their crimes against entertaining football this year cannot go unpunished.
Yeah, I think you've given them enough leash this season, Mike. We're in the month of November, and this is around the time where contenders start making their move. And based on the performance that we saw from the Chiefs last night, they don't seem poised to do so. Also, when you consider the upcoming schedule, your Green Bay Packers at home this week, then you've got the Las Vegas Raiders on the road, and then you're back with the Dallas Cowboys. Doesn't necessarily seem like it's setting up for them to be able to make a run here. So we could be talking about their season being over by the time we're eating our turkey for Thanksgiving.
Going to be rough.
Number 4.
Want to read you a quote. Nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. I know I certainly don't. I think the rest of the members of the competition committee feel that way too. Chris, you have any idea who said that?
No clue.
That would be John Mara, the owner of the New York Football Giants, before the season talking about these god-awful taunting penalties we were getting ready to see, only to have the Giants game against the Kansas City Chiefs partially undone by a taunting penalty last night in the middle of that game here. Chris, I don't know if that technically qualifies as poetic justice, but it certainly feels like it.
No, it certainly feels like there is some poetic justice, a little sense of irony with that with John Mara. But here's the thing, man. When you're a bad football team, you're a bad football team. And that's ultimately where the New York Football Giants are. And it's embarrassing as an alum that this is the state of affairs when it comes to that particular program. But things aren't going to change with the team on the field until things change at the top with the front office and ownership and the way they do business. Until further notice, we just have to accept what this team is, which is an organization that has had teams on the field since 2017 that have combined for a record of 20-52. That is the New York Football Giants. That is how far they've fallen from the Super Bowl years in the 2000s and early 2010s. Unfortunate, but that's where it's at.
Falling from Super Bowl glory to a taunting call on fullback Eli Penny helping undo a game. You can't script this stuff. Number 3.
Number 3.
Another just flat-out terrible call that helped cost the team a game here. Chris, down the stretch of the Jets and White Mike's upset of the Cincinnati Bengals that we thought were at the top of the AFC, was the unnecessary roughness call on the Mike Hilton tackle at the end of the game that was one of the plays that cost Cincinnati that game, a game that never should have been that close, but Chris, a call that looks flat-out ridiculous no matter which side you're on.
Yeah, it was third and long, and Mike White swings it out to Ty Johnson, and it's clear that Mike Hilton has already lowered his level in order to try to make the tackle, and then Ty Johnson is the one that initiates the helmet-to-helmet contact. That was one that the refs missed. There's nothing that the defensive player can do under the circumstances, and so that gave the Jets a first down, and then Mike White had a quarterback sneak after that to give them another first down to salt that game away. So it felt like a bad break in the moment for the Cincinnati Bengals. But in terms of the overall performance, the Bengals have no one to blame but themselves because they let Mike White and the Jets get back in that game in the second half. That's on them.
Number two.
That's on them. This one is on the decision makers for the Los Angeles Rams here, because number four on this one, I'm sorry, it's got to be the Los Angeles Rams scouting department here in the college ranks. I mean, my God, look at the Rams' current 2020 draft picks. They traded their first rounder to the Lions for Stafford. They traded the second and third rounders to the Broncos for Von Miller. They traded the fourth rounder to the Texans in a spot for Brandon Cooks. They traded their sixth rounder to the Patriots, and their second rounder, their seventh rounder and fifth rounder are the only ones left, Chris. Their college scouting department's going to have the easiest spring known to mankind.
It sounds like this is going to be a light draft class for the L.A. Rams. And listen, this is a group that doesn't send a whole lot of people to the combine anyway to scout college prospects. The Rams have shown you where they're at with it. They're not rebuilding. They're just retooling to try to go on a Super Bowl run while they still have Matt Stafford in his prime years and while they still have a defense with two of the best players in defense in all of football. So I just feel like this is what you do when you recognize the talent that you have on this team. You made decisions to try to go all in on this season prior to things getting kicked off for 2021, and now I feel like this deal for Von Miller at the deadline just continues to support those same decisions. So I'm all for it. I'm fascinated on how this is going to work out just because it doesn't seem like it's a sustainable model. But if you win a championship, who cares about sustainability anyway?
Number one.
Speaking of not being able to sustain, apparently technology and the New York Giants have also been a tough mix. Head coach Joe Judge, after their loss, said in a number of instances, quote, the headsets were going out. We're having headset issues. This has happened in every game so far. We deal with the league, and they keep telling us that there are different software updates or whatever it is. But we had to call two timeouts because we were trying to send deals in personnel-wise, and you got half the headsets not getting reception. So Joe Judge trying to blame part of their communication issues when it comes to timeouts and others on a lack of quality headsets. Well, in a statement from the NFL, they responded saying, quote, we're looking into all matters involved with the all involved parties. However, we're confident that nothing is attributable to the Bose headsets. A reminder that nothing comes before the money, Chris Canty, not even the well-being or the communication of your football teams.
Yeah, so let me get this straight. With Joe Judge, he couldn't figure out how to work the headset, so he had to call timeouts. Meanwhile, at the end of the game, when the Kansas City Chiefs had a goal-to-goal possession in the red zone, he decided that he wasn't going to take any timeouts to try to preserve clock for his team. He was going to save the lone timeout that he had for the other side of the two-minute warning and let the Kansas City Chiefs run the clock all the way down to the two-minute warning. So, in effect, not using the timeout when you could have created two timeouts at the end of the game where you would be trailing by three. That makes a whole lot of sense. But no. Let's blame the Bose headsets. Let's do that.
Blame it on the headset. So that is how the bottom five goes out with a whimper this week from the NFL weekend that was. Coming up next, though, one of the parts of that bottom five needs some answers here. What do we do about the Chiefs? What do we do about Carson Wentz? Dan Orlovsky can help us with that next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hoping to talk to Dan Orlovsky here in just a sec on the Goodyear Hotline, our ESPN NFL analyst. But, Chris, I am dying right now. I just read a tweet from our colleague Michael Eaves, great SportsCenter anchor around here, who tweeted out that apparently Stephen A. Smith tried to rename Kendrick Perkins and Marcus Spears podcast, Swagoo and Perk, that you can get wherever you get your podcast, to Huff and Puff.
I love it. I love it. It feels like it perfectly fits those two guys, right?
That podcast, in addition to having the greatest like country nicknames for every possible situation, the greatest sayings on earth, certainly going to have a fair amount of huffing and puffing. Those are big dudes. A lot of sweat towels are going to be attendance there, but that is going to be must-listen and stuff.
Oh, no question about it. And Big Perk already said they're not going to be heavy on the guests just because the two of them talk real slow. So it's going to take them at least a half hour just to get through everything that they want to talk about just because of how they had that Southern draw. So I can't wait for it, man. I'm excited about it, being able to listen to those two guys, because I think they bounce off of each other really, really well, man. Highly entertaining stuff coming from, as Stephen A. Smith is trying to put it, Huff and Puff.
They're going to lead the league in country dad sayings. There's so much dad energy on that podcast. It's unbelievable. Very excited. Everyone make sure you check that out. It's awesome stuff here. Candy and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Wrangler. You think you know Wrangler jeans? Check out Wrangler.com today to discover new styles and all the latest denim trends. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who's in, who's out for you on the college football playoffs first round of rankings? We got that coming up tonight. The rankings going to be going live. ESPN's got a special coming up at 7 o'clock Eastern right after our show. We'll also have rankings reaction on Twitter, YouTube, all the other digital platforms. Myself, Jason Fitz, and Christine Williamson starting at 8 Eastern. And Chris, right now, the way I look at it, the top six in this whole thing, because if anyone's new to this rankings process, the way the committee goes about this, and we've got a lot of new members on the committee, certainly going to be a factor in things. But Chris, I went through the mock exercise doing this down in Dallas 1 year, and they actually do this up top by pods of three. And so they'll try and vote and find the top three teams that they've got, and then they'll do the next three teams, so four, five, and six. And so that top six ends up always being pretty important, the first four in and the last two out. I right now would rank it, but judging based off what the committee does, strength of schedule, what you've done so far, non-conference wins, your ranked wins, all these different things, would go Georgia at number one, Michigan State at number two, Cincinnati at number three, and Alabama at number four, with Oklahoma and Oregon just on the outside looking in right now. How's that sound to you?
That sounds pretty good. I just, here's the thing. I have a hard time believing that Cincinnati is a top three team in the country just based on what their talent level is and what we've seen from those other teams. But I do feel like they're deserving to be included in the top four in the initial college football playoff rankings just because they've beaten everybody on their schedule, including an AP top 25 team in Notre Dame that has done nothing but continue to win and is just sitting on the outside of the top 10 in the rankings. So I don't know, man. I have a hard time with this one for me. I look at where Cincinnati is as a program. I look at what the job that Luke Fickell has done, and I want to try to assign them the opportunity to be a part of this. But we just know from, you know, a competition standpoint, teams that are coming out of the Power Five conferences, they are going to face a tougher schedule. They are going to be more tested. They are going to be more proven when they emerge on the other side of it. So when we start talking about programs like Georgia, like Alabama, like Oklahoma, like Michigan State, and potentially Ohio State, I mean, you have to feel like if any one of those teams are going to run the table, then they would leapfrog where Cincinnati would be in the initial rankings in the college football playoff.
Yeah, that, and this is a good point, Chris, to make about the distinction between the initial rankings and what I think is going to potentially happen as the season goes along here. Because we're hearing all this conversation about Ohio State, who took that loss to Oregon in week two of the season, and ever since then has been dominant, especially on offense, has looked like a team that's improved a lot after that initial sin of losing a game, a big-time game early in the season. But you're right about Cincinnati. Right now, I think they deserve to be in the mix in all of this. They did exactly what we've asked every Group of Five team to do, Chris. Go out and schedule tough non-conference games. There is no SEC team and only one Big Ten team, that being Purdue, that's even going to play two non-conference road games this season, let alone ones in the caliber that Cincinnati thought they were getting. IU was supposed to be a better team and bottomed out this season. Notre Dame has lived up to it since then. So I think where we're cutting off the grading for right now, I think they're absolutely in the mix. But when you look at what happens going forward, Chris, you look at this team. Cincinnati's remaining strength of schedule is going to be 81st in the country for the rest of the year. Mm. Compare that to Alabama, whose remaining strength of schedule is eighth, includes a potential for a ranked win against number 12 Auburn in the Iron Bowl at the end of the season, and then what comes up with the SEC championship game. Ohio State's remaining strength of schedule, ninth, with potential ranked matchups against Michigan State, who could be in the top three tonight, and Michigan, who's just coming off of that loss. Compare that to Oklahoma, who's got a shot at ranked Baylor and ranked Oklahoma State at the end of the year. Michigan State, who's going to face Ohio State and Penn State. Like, I can keep going on down the list. The resume points are going to be there for a lot of the rest of the teams flirting right around this area. For Cincinnati, SMU just lost to Houston. Like, that was supposed to be the best game remaining for their schedule. And so as we go along with this, I think those resume points are going to matter if we keep talking about all the games being played mattering.
No question about it. And, Mike, I'm just sitting here thinking about the SEC and the role they're going to have to play in all of this happening. I mean, if Georgia and Alabama win out and get to the SEC championship game and Alabama pulls off the upset, I don't know, man. It feels like it makes the margin of error for Cincinnati staying in the college football playoff top four that much slimmer, right?
It does. Oh, absolutely makes the margin of error slimmer for them. And that's going to be the issue here, Chris. That's why I feel bad, because the initial ranking, I know, even if they're in the top three, everyone's going to be mad about Cincinnati because they're anti-establishment, because people are sick and tired of, I'm sure, seeing the same programs dominate the top of college football. That's a resources problem. People want to make that a rigging of the system problem, and I just don't think that's the case. Like, we talk about this all the time, Chris. There are only a handful of programs with the resources to be successful and to compete at the level that the top of college football is. And if you want to say, hey, just for variety being the spice of life, let's feed a couple of different teams to the buzzsaw instead of Notre Dame and Oklahoma, you can say that, but just tell me it's from an emotional standpoint and not based on actual competition.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where a lot of people are at. They're not trying to say that Cincinnati is, you know, talent-wise, better than Georgia, Alabama, or Oklahoma, Michigan State, Ohio State. I don't think they're on that level, and I don't think anybody's trying to make that argument. What they're saying is, if there was ever going to be a Group of Five team that belonged in the college football playoff, as the playoff is constituted, then this would be the team. But I think people that are riding for Cincinnati are really riding for college football playoff expansion and just including more teams. That way there's more of a pathway for these Group of Five teams to be able to get in. There's more margin for error with them when it comes to the strength of schedule and being able to make the case that they belong in the top eight or the top 12 or whatever the college football playoff ends up being years down the line. But I think that's the bigger conversation in all of this. I don't think it's that Cincinnati is actually one of the four best teams in all of college football, and that's what the committee is charged with trying to figure out in determining who's going to compete for the national championship.
So that's all coming up starting at 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN. We'll get to more of that with Jason Fitz joining us here in the next hour. Coming up next, though, Justin Fields went out and did the damn thing a little bit this weekend here. The one common denominator that seems to be present in all of Justin Fields' success. We'll get to that after this word from AT&T. Now, if there are friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So, AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr.
The NFL trade deadline is today at 4 Eastern. Follow the very latest moves. Get complete reaction and analysis. Plus, what's next? From Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, starting at 6 Eastern and continuing all day. The NFL is on ESPN Radio.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline coming up in about 10 minutes. Whether you want to or not, Jason Fitz is going to be here to talk with you about the college football playoff and for you to be ready to have the conversation with your family about what's going to happen to the Oregon Ducks and the Cincinnati Bearcats. That's you know, it's just the important public service that we do here, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's what it is. I know a lot of people are going to feel a way about what happens to Cincinnati long-term and what happens to Oregon long-term, but the reality is the strength of schedule is going to weigh heavily down the stretch here in determining how the committee puts together the top four teams in the final rankings. That's just the reality of where college football is at.
It is the reality. The reality of all of this is, quite frankly, we just feel like we're getting ready to inevitably feed someone new to Georgia's defense that probably deserves its own spot in the college football playoff rankings without the offense there. Because half the time, it looks like they don't need them. So that's what we're dealing with on the college front here. Chris, on the NFL front, this last weekend, the stat line might not show it as much. But Justin Fields, I thought, played some of the best ball we've seen of his rookie season so far. The quarterback for the Chicago Bears, the first-round pick that they traded up to draft, went 19 for 27 with a 175 and one touchdown through the air, but also had 10 carries for over 100 yards and a touchdown on the ground in a game where Matt Nagy, their head coach, was not on the sideline present because of being in the COVID-19 protocol. And Chris, I know this was going to be the most low-hanging fruit of, well, Matt Nagy's not there and Justin Fields succeeds. Surprise, surprise. But I don't know. At this point, it feels low-hanging because it's been built up so much based on the actions of Matt Nagy. It feels like he's kind of earned this.
No, it does feel like he's kind of earned it because it doesn't seem like he's put Justin Fields in positions where he can be successful. And that's ultimately what he's going to be judged on, right? Because we don't believe the Bears are going to do any high-level winning this season. I mean, you're talking about a team that's 3-5 through the first half of the season. So it just feels like they're going to be on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoff picture. So if you can't sell winning, then you have to sell hope. And that hope is in the form of Justin Fields to Bears fans. And I got to say it, like, this is one of the few instances where Justin Fields in a start looked like an NFL quarterback. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. But did he have some wow plays? You're absolutely right, he did. I mean, the one that stands out in my mind is early in the fourth quarter, or first, fourth and one, where they're calling that read zone play, and he's kind of taken off to the edge. He gets cut off by the 49ers defense, and he reverses field, and the guy gets in the end zone, 22-yard scramble for a touchdown. Like, those are plays that average quarterbacks just can't make. I mean, Justin Fields, when he tucks the ball and he runs, he looks like a running back. Like, that's how dynamic he is. So if you can figure out a way to unlock his potential in that way and get him more comfortable and settled into games, I think his arm talent and his proficiency in the passing game will shine through. The problem that we have with the Chicago Bears and Matt Nagy in particular is they haven't put Justin Fields in enough of those situations where you've gotten him into the flow of the game and you've built up his confidence. I mean, you can't say that after he's coming off of a 5-turnover game down in Tampa. So the fact that the kid was able to bounce back is a good sign. I still hate the body language from Justin Fields on the sideline. That's something that he's going to have to work on. But in terms of just seeing the raw materials that a coach has to work with, it's all right there for the Chicago Bears. Their head coach, Matt Nagy, has just got to do a better job of game planning around it so that stuff comes out more often.
Ken Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Special teams coordinator Chris Tabor was on the sideline for them as the head coach in that game. We know Bill Lazor has been the one calling the plays for Justin Fields. And Chris, I think you just hit on it there. The special play that we saw, like, it was unlocked because this game they did what everyone from the outside has been looking at and saying, like, run more play action, move the pocket with a quarterback that did that extremely well at Ohio State. But the bottom line is he displayed a special ability. That's why you trade up for guys in his position, because they can do things that few other people in the world can. What special ability has Matt Nagy displayed so far as the Chicago Bears head coach? Ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to, right? Is we have got a unique ball of clay that we need someone to mold just a little bit, and the guy that's supposed to be doing it right now hasn't demonstrated the ability to do that with, quite frankly, any part of this roster. Because that's the other part that sticks out, Chris. There is not an overwhelming amount of talent that they've amassed on this roster, and that certainly goes not just to Matt Nagy, but to the folks above him that they're going to pay as well this offseason.
Oh, yeah. Ryan Pace is culpable in this entire mess that is the Chicago Bears right now, too. Like, he's kind of on his last legs as well, and they've got to figure out whether or not they're going to allow this tandem to continue forward with the development of this program. And I'm not sure that Justin Fields is capable of being able to do enough in the second half of this season to justify sticking with either one of them. But I mean, that's ultimately what it's going to come down to, right? Like, the job security of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace is going to come down to a referendum on the job that the organization and ownership believes that they've done with developing Justin Fields. If they feel like they need to continue down that path because Justin is becoming more consistent, then they'll stay with him. Otherwise, they're going to clip him and bring in somebody else that they feel like can serve their young quarterback better.
Yeah, I feel like that's only a matter of time at this point. Like, it's one of those things we always say, sometimes cliches are cliches because they're true. Sometimes this situation feels obvious because it has been for quite some time. Coming up next, though, anything but obvious are who the top four teams in college football are going to end up being tonight. We'll weigh in on that next here on ESPN Radio.